Hey, y'all, I got a question for you. What's a piece of gear that you maybe have unintentionally overlooked in your rig throughout the years? Well, for me, it's always been guitar cables. I figured, it just goes from the guitar to the amplifier or the guitar to the pedal board to the amp, and if one breaks, whatever, I'll just go buy another one. No big deal. Thanks to the fine folks at Runway Audio, though, I have finally seen the light. Runway Audio is based in Nashville, Tennessee, which is awesome for me because that's right down the road. But it's awesome for you as well because Runway has the best cable on the market. And what makes it the best, you ask? Well, it has the lowest capacitance of any cable on the market right now, at 20 picofarads per foot. And pretty much all that capacitance is the ability to store an electrical charge. The lower the capacitance is, the less tone that it sucks from your cable from your guitar on the way to your amplifier. So if you're in the market for anything cable-related, whether it's instrument cables, patch cables, XLR cables, speaker cables, power cables, you name it, Runway Audio has got you covered. And if you go down to my link tree, click the link for Runway Audio, any purchasing you will do, I will get a little bit of a kickback from that, which is always appreciated. So check out all the awesome stuff that Runway Audio is doing and pick something up to get the best tone possible. This episode today is brought to you by Stringjoy Guitar Strings, the finest strings on the market. For me, it has been the Orbiters that have been my absolute go-to ever since they have come out, and that's their coated electric strings. But if the coated thing's not your thing, totally get it. The Signatures and the Broadways in their electric line, top-notch quality. For acoustic guitars, they have their Naturals and their Brights, along with the Foxwoods, which are their coated Fosper Bronze. For all you bassists out there, too, they have the Signatures and the Rangers. Full disclosure, the link down below is my affiliate link, so if you would like to check out Stringjoy, click that link down below. Not only will you be getting the finest guitar strings on the market, but you'll also be helping out this podcast, which I greatly appreciate. So, head on over to Stringjoy today. I'm not even close to the tip of the iceberg of all the awesome things that Stringjoy does, so click the link down below and check them out for yourself. Welcome back to Man the Helm Podcast. Mike and I are back, and today I have a new pedal. It's very limited edition.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful red knob.
Yeah, so the Whampoa Germanium Tumnus, man. Apparently, this caused quite a fiasco online. I don't know if you've been seeing anything from them. Apparently, they only made 2,500 of them. Well, here's the problem. They put them up for sale. Well, they had stuff that got sent to retailers.
Right.
They put them up for sale. They sold out, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, people on the internet, you always do. I want to say they sold out in less than like 6 hours everything.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Exactly. I think it was a little shorter than that. I want to say it was closer to like 2, but raise that up a little bit. But anyway, whenever this came out, their server got like overloaded, I guess.
Not surprised.
Right. Yeah. But the problem is there are people that got put on a waiting list that they didn't have the stock for.
Oh no. Some software engineer is going to be in trouble.
Well, unlike the Nauticon, where they've been very transparent and been like, hey, we are making more of these. They're not making any more of these.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's kind of inconvenient if you got in like, what, that batch 3 or 4 and you're going to have to wait till March, right? Something like that. You're getting it though.
Yeah.
That's the point. With these, they're not getting it. So they put out this post on Facebook and their other socials that I saw it on Facebook where they kind of like did a blanketed statement of, you know, apologies or whatever. Good news out of all this, they're making a deluxe version of this, which was already in the plan. They saved enough of the unicorn piss diodes or whatever the hell they use.
Rat piss and uranium.
Right. to make a deluxe version of these. Now, these are going to be even more limited, and they already put a price out for it. It's going to be $299, and it's going to be sometime in
That's still not that bad, though.
Exactly. And it's sometime mid-year, so spring-ish.
Yeah, I just can't wait to see them on Reverb for like $10,000.
Dude, these are already on there for $700. It's ridiculous. It's so fucking stupid, you know? And it's so disgusting, too, because you got guys and girls that actually wanted this thing and woke up on the West Coast, and they were already gone.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But now you got guys that are, like, scalping this shit for...
I mean, always.
It always happens, but it just... Maybe it's just because I'm biased towards Wampler and stuff, but it just... It makes me...
Well, the biggest problem is a lot, and this goes for like any limited release type item, not just a guitar pedal or whatever. But, you know, these guys, they'll code in bots, because I was doing IT. Well, they code in bots, and literally they run out, and those bots will buy as many as they can as fast as they can.
Right.
Because they're just going to turn around and flip them for a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know... That's the only thing that always mars like these more custom limited release. It's like when they came out with a new PRS SE, like the Silver Sky,
mm-hmm.
and a different color, and people were selling them for more than a real just Silver Sky.
Right.
And it's like, you know, to each their own, but don't be a freaking douchebag.
Well, to be fair as well. This was not advertised as anything more than a limited run. They were very transparent about when it's gone, it's gone.
Well, I mean, you can't fault a product manufacturer.
Absolutely not.
Especially whenever they came out saying, this is limited. Once they're gone, and we're done.
Yeah.
And if you got it, cool. If you didn't get it, well, better luck next time.
Well, and here's the thing with this, with the people that are upset about the, you know, people paying or charging or attempting to charge X amount of dollars for a specific pedal, it's either going to do one of two things. The market is either going to allow those people that want to buy it are going to pay that kind of money, or those people that are trying to sell it for that kind of money are going to get shot down left and right, and it's going to decrease in value until it makes sense for the consumer.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, that's what happened to the Bad Monkey. People went crazy and started posting them for crazy prices, and people started buying them, and then everyone wised up to, like, no, this pedal used to be, like, $50.
It's a tube screen with a bass control.
Yeah. Not, you know, $400, $500. I saw one for, like, $3,000.
Right.
I know that one didn't sell, and if it did, congratulations to you.
Hey. But my thing is with the like the Bad Monkey thing, like I knew that was only going to be like a 6 month peak, and then it was going to drop.
I don't even think it made it that far.
I was being probably a little generous with the 6 month.
Yeah, it was literally like I saw like the little price graph, and it was like here's October, here's August, or here's August, here's October, and then
yeah. Well, I don't want to stay on the Wampler train too long, but I do have to plug one more thing, and I don't know exactly when it's happening. But when they released their Chasing Tone podcast for this week, what week was that? Whatever, the week we had that tornado. Once again, good podcasting material right here.
Last week.
I want to be specific, though. The 13th of December in 2023.
December.
It's all the same at this point. It's just cold and wet. Anyway. Brian had brought up that he's going to start doing a custom shop thing on the actual site. So stuff that he's going to, and I'm talking like super limited runs of stuff, just stuff that he's made.
Yeah.
You know, maybe 10, 12 pedals, you know, and I thought that was pretty cool. I was like, dude, something completely unique, something boutique, and it's not going to break the bank. He's not going to sell them for like thousands of dollars either. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it'd be cool to have. It's like, you know, and for me, it's almost like, I'm going to get a pedal. They're not going to put a whole lot of like marketing into it. It's just going to be like, hey, this is what this does. And there's going to be a little blurb about it.
Yeah.
And you're going to get it and plug it in for the first time and have like really no clue what exactly it's going to do. So you're either going to love it or you're going to hate it. You know what I mean?
Well,
but if you hate it, it's a custom made pedal from one of the biggest pedal manufacturers on the planet.
I was about to say, whether you love it or hate it, now you own it.
Right. Yeah. But no, I just thought that was pretty cool. I, you know, had the opportunity to talk to him somewhat frequently, and I'd say we're pretty good online acquaintances. But yeah, I just thought that was a really cool idea, man. You know, to be able to have a custom built pedal, not really custom, but a
very limited pedal that he's building just out of nowhere. Very unique circuits too. Yeah. You're not just going to buy a Klon clone or a Tube Screamer or a Blues Breaker style thing, you know?
Nah, I want a Fuzz Face clone.
There you go. Hey, dude, he can do it. Actually, the Velvet Fuzz from them is supposed to be the fuzz that guitar players will actually love. Or it's supposed to be the fuzz that people that don't like fuzz like. Something like that. Anyway, I don't know.
You should write this marketing down.
I know, right? If you guys want to offer me a job for my rambling, I would appreciate it immensely.
This is fuzz that people sort of like, maybe kind of, sort of.
Yeah, you know. It does a thing. It does a cool thing. Sometimes not a cool thing.
Everything on the site. It does a thing.
Yeah, hit me up. You can send me an invoice for all of my creative ramblings.
The quickest hire and fire in history.
Hey, at least I can put it on a resume, right?
Yeah. What'd you learn at Wampler Pedals? Copy and paste.
Copy paste. Just like I do in any DAW that I'm using. No, that's not true. I try to double track everything, man. But let's talk about something else besides Wampler, man. You brought up a good idea, so I'll let you start off with this one.
Well, I posed the question, you know, especially as for someone that literally ended up doing exactly what I'm talking about, or the question that I had, which was, you know, whenever I came here, came straight from Kuwait, came to Nashville, and I was like, you know, I want to be involved in the music scene. I want to kind of know where to get gigs, find people to play with, you know, and, you know, this isn't just, it's not specific to Nashville, but just specific to my experience. And, you know, trying to find other people to play with, you know, who do I need to know to get these gigs or find people to play with or play down on Broadway? You know, even up here in Clarksville, there's a couple bars that are pretty good to play at.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, literally pretty much I looked everywhere on Post because apparently nobody plays in the Army, which was a first.
That's odd.
It was. They were more obsessed with air assault and energy drinks and
nicotine.
Going to Nashville and getting laid. So, well, you know, I can't knock it. But yeah. Anyways, but I ended up going on Facebook and just joining a random group and got hooked up with a guy and then met, you know, Dan, and ended up moving with him to this new band, and then met Jake, and
that's me.
You know, yes, it is you. But you know, but it took me a solid, I want to say, year and a half to even really, and I mean, like, I got a random Broadway gig out of nowhere, and then never heard from that guy again. It was just like a little one and done, one to play, and then moved on to something else or moved on with someone else, and it's whatever. But, you know, didn't really, it took me a long time to kind of find the people to play with.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to take this back just one step from finding people to play with. One of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard was, you as a musician need to figure out what you want to do. If you want to play, enter whatever genre, like let's just use like here in this area as an example, I would classify it into probably about four primary groups. You have the traditional country thing of, and when I say traditional country, we're going to branch off of that, where we have everything from bro country to like bluegrass flat picking, okay, and everything in between. I'm just keeping that a very general subcategory of this. Then you have your like metal bands, you know, like and insert adjective core or whatever down core, you know, that's the type of thing that you're seeing here too. Or you have the straight up cover stuff, right? Or you have the more traditional, like, this is going to be pretty broad in general again, like rock Americana-ish.
Yeah, I mean, sort of thing. That real fourth subcategory is like more like you randomly coming across this person that does reggae or this person that does blues or jazz or more rock-oriented. So it's kind of like almost a miscellaneous category, sure. But it's a not very often category that you're going to find.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the first thing. Find out exactly what you want to be playing. You know, like if you want to play bluegrass, you need to go find dudes that play Martin guitars and mandolins and banjos, right? If you want to play rock, you need to go to, you know, hell, man, just your local guitar shop. You're going to find people that play rock and roll. If you want to play metal, same thing, man. It's just finding those, like, and like you did, you kind of utilize social media, which I always recommend. I guarantee you, if you look in your specific city, whoever's listening to this right now, and type in city band or city rock, city country, city whatever genre, yeah, you're going to find a group that's associated with it.
Well, so my thing was, whenever I first got on and was looking at groups, is I would get, you know, message 20 people and get back like, oh man, well, we're going to, but it's like, not now, but I'll get back to you. And it's like, you know, and you kind of have just like the same thing, if I guess, you know, trying to buy something on Facebook, you have the time wasters, you have the people that weren't ever really serious about it in the first place, or you have someone so serious about it that, dear God, you don't even want to interact with them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, as far, like, it's not so much, yeah, I mean, the easiest kind of answer to it is hop on Facebook, but it's like, you know, is what would be your more organic way of kind of establishing that?
Open mics, for sure.
Yeah.
Going to open mics, doing your own thing. Even if you can't sing, even if you can't really play with a band well, just going and hanging out with those people. That old adage of you got to be present to be known.
Yeah.
If you're not present, no one's going to know who you are. And I'm telling you right now, there's usually this like underlying fear that I've seen with people the first time they get like into a new place, or they're playing with people that never played before. You need to do your best to just push that to the side and just play like we talked about before, just play authentic to yourself. Yeah. Just be yourself, you know, try your best not to be an asshole, because nobody has time for that if they're trying to be serious about that sort of thing.
Well, no one wants to play with you if you're just going to be an asshole.
Right.
Or Mr. Negativity.
Right. So just, you know, I would recommend finding an open mic night, a local jam, something where you can go, preferably an open jam, because if you can find an open jam, one, it's going to be way more fun than just you grabbing an acoustic right. guitar or something and going up there and trying to sing whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, I even saw a guy at Revel House who went and he played all the lead parts, but it was to backing tracks that had vocals.
Yeah.
And he freaking killed it.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, you know, unorthodox, yes, but more memorable than the three other acoustic players, and some of them were probably pretty good. It's just, you know, some things stick with people that, you know, it won't stick with everyone. And I think I know just from my experience. I mean, that's really all I can draw from.
Sure.
I haven't, you know, most everyone I talk to is like, oh man, I've lived here for like 25 years, and I'm like, well, cool. I've lived here for like two.
Right.
But, you know, and I think that what terrifies most people is just being like judged. You sure. know, especially trying to play like downtown, because it is such a serious thing. And like some of those people, like every time I've gone downtown, I literally see the same faces. And it's like, you know, as cool as it is to get those gigs, like if that's what someone wanted to do, you know, how would you necessarily break into something like that?
Well, and I'm speaking specifically from like a music oriented city, right? So a city like Nashville, a city like LA, a city like New York, even places like Cleveland, you know, places that have like, or Portland, you know, a dedicated, like you think of those cities as music producing cities.
Yeah, I consider them like legacy
sure.
cities.
Now, that's not to say that every other city in the United States doesn't have some sort of music scene, because I guarantee you it does. It might not be as prevalent, as the Nashville thing or the Portland or LA or New York thing.
Yeah, because I found out Philadelphia is jazz because John Coltrane is from there.
Right.
And I was like, well, that is something new.
Right. It is a cultural thing too, because like, you know, if you go down to this area, you know, it's mostly that country Americana bro country thing now, especially, you know, which is fine, but that's the general idea. There are so many other people that actually kill it down here that are doing their own unique thing, and they're awesome. But same thing, if you go down to like, you know, south of here, you know, now we're getting into like that southern rock, and if you go southwest of here, now we're getting into that like Delta blues side of things, you know. Yeah. What I mean, so it's entirely dependent on where you're at, but regardless, you'll find whatever niche you need to fall into. It might not be as big as other places, but it will be there. For instance, for Nashville, they have writers' nights all the time, and I'm talking nobody famous, nobody that's written a hit song is going to be there.
Yeah.
Just normal people, just like me and you. And to be honest with you, I hate when people compare these other more accomplished musicians to anything more than just normal people. Everybody's just a dude.
Yeah.
And if you treat every interaction like that, you're super nice, you're super responsive. The hardest part about this is that self-doubt with you on your instrument.
Exactly.
The way I think you get around that is the years you spent by yourself in your room perfecting that craft.
Yeah.
You know?
What I mean, there is a marketed or marked difference between playing in a room and playing on a stage.
Absolutely. Yes. Yeah. And the only way you're going to get better, it's the same thing as when you started learning whatever instrument you're learning. The only way you got better was by doing the thing. If you want to go play with bands, the only way to get better at playing with bands is by doing the thing, by getting on a stage, regardless of how big, and playing. Because we talked about it before, I believe, because there's going to be times where you have crap that happens and you're just not going to be prepared for it. And you just have to be able to play through it. You know, you're going to have instances where strings break, or you're going to have instances where your pedal doesn't come on when you click it. You're going to have instances where your amp catches on fire and you're just like, hey, you know, I'm going to act like I'm still playing, you know?
Yeah, got to do what you got to do.
But no, that's the biggest thing. And I think the only way that you get that is by gigging. You know, and I don't think there's like a set like list of things that you have to do. I think the easiest way to do it, I've tried to live by this best I can, and I'm not always good at it. Three rules for being a musician: you show up on time, you're good at your instrument, and you're a nice person. If you have two of those three, you're solid, because they'll forgive the other one, right? Maybe not the not good at your instrument part, but
I've seen more people be willing to to look past being good at your instrument than if you're just a dick.
Right.
If you're a dick, no one is going to have a problem when it's like, oh, you know, Mike couldn't make it to the gig. Oh no. Yeah, it's no.
Okay, so this is where this is a double-edged sword, right? I've said it before. Musicians are in a minority where there's not very many people that actually play an instrument.
Right.
You know what I mean? The problem is the people that do play instruments, if you are an asshole, there's 15 other people that can take your place.
That's what I tell people, like, you know, don't sit there and get super comfortable. 'Cause like, you know, like, I'm pretty sure that, I don't remember his name, but the drummer for Slipknot, you know, I'm pretty sure, you know, there was nothing that came out like he was doing anything wrong. And after 10 years of holding down that spot, he got a text message saying, hey, you're no longer in this band. Best wishes to you. And, you know, I mean, that's not verbatim.
Right, right. We're speaking very generally here.
Regardless of what message it was, if I got a text message like, hey, 10 years, you know, it's so awesome that you've been playing in this band, kick rocks. No text message is going to make that feel better for me.
No, no.
Not unless it's right followed right after it with, just kidding.
Yeah, right. JK.
Which even then, I'm still probably going to kill you. But.
Well, and that uncomfortable part, I think, is what makes you better. You're living in that uncomfortable situation. For instance, in a band scenario, if you know for a fact that you're not the best player in the room and you got to bring it every day, that's the only way you like really like you take those peaks and valleys that you get as a player that usually kind of level out as you start to get into that, you know, more advanced plane. And then you just exponentially grow because now you're having to bring your A game every day.
Well, and that's what I always, because I have a friend that's living in Germany. And he was like, you know, he's like, I've been practicing the stuff that you told me and the things that you showed me. He's like, but I'm not really seeing as many improvements as whenever we were in Kuwait together. And right. I was like, well, first of all, starting from a beginner to like that more intermediate range is going to be way faster than intermediate to advanced.
Yeah.
And I was like, but when you pair yourself with, you know, another great player of whatever instrument you're trying to play, you're going to see those gains because subconsciously you're like, I got to bring it. And consciously you're going to go, you know, what do I need to do to play like on that person's level? Do I need to do this practice? Do I need to focus on this? Do I need, you know, and it makes it, that's why I say like, it's not bad to be the worst player in the band.
No.
Because the worst player in the band can quickly become the best player in a different band because they've grown exponentially from where they first started.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing is, you know, if you're not the best player and you're playing in a band where people definitely outshine you, you know, not only do you need to have kind of a self-reflection of like, hey, like, you know, what do I need to do to get better? But if you get a critique or you get like, hey, like, you know, it's not just using bar chords, you know, it's not, or it's not G, B flat, A, it's G, B, A, you know, don't take those things to heart.
Well, it's not personal.
It's not personal. No. And if it is personal, if you're going to get just like personally attacked, then it's probably not the best people to be playing with, honestly, anyway.
Absolutely. Dude, I'm telling you, man, the check in your ego, especially for fucking guitar players at the door, is so important, man. Because I have...
Or keyboards.
Or keyboards. You're 100% right. I have no problem, and I know you've seen this, where you have played something, and I'm like, hold on, what was that? I have no problem with that because I don't know what you were playing. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like I know these crazy freaking suspended six chords or whatever the fuck you decide to play over some of this stuff.
Or it's like, you know, I'm like, all right, what exactly are you doing at this part?
Sure.
And then does it. And I'm like, okay.
Right.
And like slink back into my corner.
Well, but that's important, man, because like if you're playing with the band, the intent is to have fun. The intent is to write music, and the intent is to go play. Well, when you go play, then you're just getting the epitome of everything. You're having fun, and you're getting to play music that you wrote. Or even if you're not playing music you wrote, you're still having fun and playing music.
Well, there's an addendum to number two. Not only playing, you know, good music, but playing the right parts together.
Sure.
Because I have heard that, and I've done it too. I'm not perfect, nor will I ever say I am. Doesn't matter how long I end up, you know, staying on this earth. But at the end of the day, like, if you are going to go play out somewhere, make sure you know all the right parts. Because I guarantee you, a not-so-good sound, a not-so-good singer, a not-so-good instrument or instrumentalist, but all playing the same parts at the same time will sound infinitely better than having virtuosos at every part, but they can't play together, we're squat.
Dude, I'm telling you, man, the make or break point for any band is not on the individual. It's on everybody that can gel together and play. that, like, I mean, I cannot tell you how many times I have screwed up where I, you know, like we play, we were, when I was playing in that cover band, man, you know, like we'd start and I'd be like, oh, I'm just tuned around to drop D, no big deal. I tuned down to drop D real quick for the next song while the singer's, you know, talking to the crowd. And then I completely forget to tune back up for the next song. And I go to hit a big E chord and it's just, you know, it's horrible. It happens all the time. That being said, though, it's something that is easily recoverable. You know what I mean? Because now it's like, okay, well, okay, kids, this is why it's important. You have a freaking tuner on your board. Get a tuner, put it on your board. Make sure it's always on too, man. Because, dude, me having that volume pedal, I can have it always on. So even if my signal's going through all the way through, I can still see everything and I can just, oh, we're good.
Yeah. My favorite thing is whenever you're playing with, when you're playing in a band and everyone's going, everyone's having fun, you know, so on and so forth. And like you have like that one weird thing that happens, like maybe someone hits a wrong note and everyone just like stares.
Oh, dude, I'm so guilty of that. It's not even funny.
But one of my favorite things that happened to me was freaking Sweet Child of Mine. God, I hate that damn song.
Well, I mean, how many times have you played that, man? Like a billion, probably?
Yeah, like a billion now. But it would be funny because I'd start on that intro and I'd be like, no, 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 damn it, we're starting again. Da 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 da. Like, nope. And it, you know, it, even I've played covers live and like hit like that first chord and I'm like, look at the crowd, hang on, tune up real quick. All right, now we're good. I was testing y'all to see if y'all were paying attention.
Well, and see, situations like that, man, like, yeah, ideally you never want to have to stop playing.
Yeah, but
when you have an instance like that and you have to, you make it a joke. You make it a joke at your own expense. Everybody in the crowd laughs for about that 15 seconds it takes for you to tune back up, and you move on from it.
Well, you know, and especially because of playing bass for so long and being more comfortable with that instrument in particular, whenever I'm a bass player, I am beyond goofy.
Sure.
Whenever I play, and it's because I'm not having to really focus on what I'm playing because I can play it, you know, kind of one of those things. But it's, I get to have more fun with the instrument and engage the crowd. And, you know, I've gotten, you know, threatened by some dude in the crowd because some chick, you know, screamed whenever I hit a note. And I stopped what I was doing, gave her a little heart sign, gave her a little finger point, and then went back to playing. And, you know.
That's just part of the gig, man.
Yeah. Hey, everyone is a rock star, at least in their own head.
Well, yeah. I mean, well, so here's the thing, man. And here's the other thing. Like, I got another thing to add to like the gigging side of things and kind of helping you out. But before we hit that, when you're up on stage, when you get to that point, unless it's like a super like chill acoustic gig, another great piece of advice that I was given from a really good friend of mine was nobody wants to go to a show and see their next door neighbor on stage. They want to see the flamboyant rock star so they can live that vicariously for that like 40 minutes that you're up there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Now I'm not talking cat suits and fucking makeup and all that shit. But what I'm saying is that like you did, you're having fun with the crowd. You're engaging with the crowd that they just don't want somebody that would just like stand in their room and not move around and just strum chords.
Well, so it's like one of the first or second gigs that I ever did with that ska band. And, you know, and we always took video performances.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't anything that we were going to like throw on YouTube, even though I think one of them ended up there. But it was just for us to critique ourselves and, you know, critique the sound, you know, as good as video quality and sound quality was in 2012 at this point.
Yeah.
Not horrible. Bad. Not horrible, but definitely not anything what we have today.
Well, sure, sure.
But, you know, and I remember watching that video and I was like, you know, if I wanted a bunch of animatronics on stage, I would have gone down to Chuck E. Cheese because they had more. I was like, Chuck E. Cheese and his little band have more life than y'all do.
Yeah.
Because they look, I was like, y'all look like y'all are getting ready to go check out your first dead body. Y'all are all just stiff and pale and terrified. I was like, listen, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They don't like it. I was like, guess what? And like, there's not going to be, if you're looking for obsessive amounts of like gratitude and praise and all that other stuff, this is not for you.
Well, especially in that first, like, you know, and all the gigging stuff we're talking about at a very low level,
pretty much town level,
where and possibly a somewhat of a state level thing, right? Where your band is good enough to where you guys will go two towns over, three towns over, yeah, and go play a gig. We're not talking about like any regional stuff. We're just talking like straight starting point. You have a band, you're playing in your town. And that's like what I'm talking about with the goofy stuff as far as like, hang on, guys, I got a tune. You know what I mean? Obviously, when you get up to that higher level, you're not going to be doing that sort of stuff. You're going to be a little bit more prepared. But the other thing that I was thinking about too, whenever you're like, so let's say you do move to like a music city, right? You can't, let's be very specific here. Let's say you're a guitar player. You're moving from Indianapolis, Indiana. Here you go. That's where I'm from. You're moving from Indianapolis coming down to Nashville because you're going to make it, right? And you're only a guitar player. Yeah. You need to learn how to do other things. And when I mean other things, stuff that you wouldn't think about. Yeah, obvious answer, singing.
Vocals.
You should be able to at least provide somewhat of decent backup vocals, right? Because that's going to make you more marketable.
Yeah.
When you decide to go out and get out and about,
they're not looking for the next Brooks and Dunn. They're looking for the next add something to this section right here.
Another thing that people don't think about: can you work on your instrument? Can you do a basic setup? Can you, you know, chase down noise in a signal path in your pedal board? Can you change a drum head? Yeah, like all these tiny little things that you would think are so minuscule could be huge in that sort of environment where you're just adding more things to make you more, what's a good word for that?
Marketable.
Sure. We go with that.
Well, I mean, and I would also say another big one is, are you willing to be a roadie?
Dude.
Because the last thing that I want to see, or as far as like, you know, other than my condition, but as far as like even when I was playing, you know, I'd show up with a bass cab, a bass head, two cables, one into the input and one to the direct out. And I was done. So the very first thing I did was move on to probably the drummer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, if selling someone out to the point of like, hey, guess what? You know, I know it took you probably an hour and a half to tear all that down, and it's going to take you a good 20-30 minutes to set it back up. You know, if you want to be in a band, act like you're in the band.
Yeah.
Don't act like you're the main piece, because I guarantee it doesn't matter who you are. I don't care if you're Kenny Chesney. Kenny Chesney is not Kenny Chesney without the 13 other musicians that are on stage with him.
And then you take that even deeper, man. You're talking about their live sound guys, you're talking about their light guys, they're talking about, like you said, their road crew.
Like don't be afraid to be a team player.
Yeah, he obviously, like in a situation like that, he is obviously the focal point.
Right.
But there are so many cogs in that wheel making that thing spin.
Well, I mean, look how many people he's paying for.
100%.
Exactly. And it's like, you know, obviously massive regional, international type bands are not the same as local bands, but it's like, you know, I lived in a van for 3 months when I was traveling around and gigging. It sucked. Yeah. Everyone in the band made more than I did by far.
Well, but like,
but it's like I gained so much experience from that, working on my stuff, working on their stuff, making a little bit here, making a little bit there, learning how to set up and tear down like within 5 seconds, because right. someone's coming up next, how to work with the sound guys, how to work with the lighting guys, you know, in being professional. Like, you can be laid back when time is right, but whenever it's that time and you're opening for someone, or you're, you know, going to be playing a festival with someone, the last thing they want is the person that doesn't care what they're doing there.
Well, dude, I can't tell you how many times we've opened up. I used to open up for like touring acts and stuff like that. I know you've been in the same boat, man. The thing that you have to understand is the people there are 9 times out of 10 not there to see you. Exactly. You are direct support.
Yeah, that's not even 9 out of 10. It's probably like 99 out of 100.
Dude, don't get me wrong. There were a few gigs that I had opening for some guys that, yeah, a lot of fans of the band I was playing in came to. And yeah, that's great. The bulk still of the crowd was there to see the headlining band. And the thing is, when you get to a situation like that, you know, I would get to load in super early. I would talk to, if they had a manager there.
Oh, that's always...
I'd be like, hey, what do I need to do to stay out of your way?
Either the manager, or if it's up to the venue, the venue manager, the venue owner, or talk to the sound guys, whoever's doing their setup.
Yep.
Make sure that you get your stuff where it needs to go. And stay the hell out of their way, because they do not need your help.
No, no. And that was the biggest thing. And that was one of the biggest things I harped on everybody about. If you're opening for somebody like this, we get on stage quick, we play.
And we get off.
We get off stage quicker. Like the getting on stage, like, we're eating in our time now. The getting off stage, though, this is their time now.
Yeah.
We need to get the fuck off now. And that's what is so important, because I'll never forget, man. There was this guy that I was playing with, and I saw this guy. He disconnected one cable from his pedal board, disconnected from the guitar, and was coiling his cable on stage. I said, dude, if you don't just unplug your shit and throw it on top of your board and get the fuck off stage.
Yeah, do that off the stage. Do it outside that first off, the loading dock area.
Yeah.
Or do it outside the stage door. Do it outside of the curtain area or wherever you're playing at.
The only thing... And that's what I thought was hilarious, because even the drummer was like not breaking down anything. We were just grabbing pieces of the kit, yeah, and we were going to break it down off stage. Once that we were off stage and out of everyone's way, now we can break down our gear, like actually break it down.
Yeah,
you know. But that's one of the biggest things that I think, and that's that thing with same thing with that fucking ego thing, man. When you're playing support for bands, if you get to that point and you're opening for people, treat it as such. You are the sideshow act for the main event.
Yeah. You're the juggling clowns. Everyone came here to see the elephant.
Yeah. Now, that's not to say you shouldn't put all your effort when you're playing.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
To play the best freaking show you can. But when that time is over, that if you get that like 30 minutes slot, when that 30 minutes is up, go. Yeah. You do not need to be here. And here's the other thing, and I've ran into this with bands too. I'm sorry I'm kind of being long-winded with this, but I've had so many like crappy experiences with this. Like if you know you're going to go play a 30-minute set, those rehearsals, those like 4 rehearsals before the show, you're drilling that set. You're drilling that set to know, okay, if we play it exactly like this, we're going to be at 29 minutes and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Perfect. You know,
well, it's like for most of the things I played in, you'd get like a 30 minute or 45 minute slot, but that was 30 or 45 minutes, get on, play, get off. Not you have a 30 minute set to play. It's 30 minutes, show up, put your stuff down, play, and get the hell off. And it's like, you know, it, whenever you're drilling that stuff, like, it's important to know, how long is it going to take to move this and move that? Because the last thing someone wants to hear, especially if someone, because we had this happen, it was Streetlight.
Okay.
Streetlight Manifesto. They were playing like directly after us, and they would always hit like a long, like, because he has like a 5-string bass, mm-hmm, or a 6-string or something like that. But he hit like that low B. and we're still trying to get stuff off stage. And then my drummer, which I love him, but he drove me nuts because of this. He started taking cymbals off.
On stage?
Not on stage, just off stage, but accidentally dropped one of them in the middle, like in the beginning of their set. And I was like, there is no amount of I'm sorry that you can give to not see the amount of eyes that went from stage to us. And even the guys in the band were like, really? It's like, I was like, it was him. I promise I'm out of here.
Well,
I need that little deuce sign where I can go invisible.
Like, if you're in a place too, like if you're playing a festival and you get your stuff off stage, or if you're playing a large venue and you get your stuff off stage,
yeah,
you don't have to break down immediately, not necessarily. There's been plenty of times where, as long as it's away and out of the way of everybody, you don't have to worry about that stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, it's not like you're gonna, especially depending on the gig and depending on the band and so on and so forth. You know, it's a perfect time, especially if you're a smaller band, get into open for a bigger band. A lot of those gals are pretty chill for the most part.
Oh, they're especially
the ones that are kind of hanging around like the town regional circuit, not really playing in the stadiums or anything like that. Like, they'll spend any amount of time with you and, you know, kind of fill you in. But it gives you a chance to meet them as this person. Like, oh, this person is Todd. I never knew that. I just knew him as bass player. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like I said earlier, man. Everybody's just a dude, man.
Yeah.
Everybody is the same. When it comes to musicians, especially, you know, like what you think of people that play in bands, the guitarists, the bassists, the drummers, the singers, we're all relatively the same. There's not that much that separates what we do. We're all kind of weirdos. We all have some weird humor. We nerd out about boxes with wires in them and bigger boxes with tubes in them. And, you know, we call it good, man. I don't know. I think with like the smaller stuff, the biggest piece of advice I would ever give to people that just wanted to get going is just find a place to be present and hang out and get to know people. Don't spam people. It's like the same thing on Facebook. Don't, or any social media. Don't spam people's DMs with like, hey, I'm a guitar player. You need a guitar player. I saw you needed a guitar player. Hey dude, I'm your guy. I'm going to tell you right now, if I got a DM like that and I was looking for people to play with, I'd be like, dude, you need to calm down. How about we like go meet up at like a jam and maybe we can talk at just like people, have a beer, you know, and call it good. Like we, you know, because there's so many times, man, where you get into those situations where you start to try to put a band together, especially in a local area. And like you said, dude, if they even respond, they show up and it's not what you were expecting. Sometimes it's good.
Yeah. I mean, like, and sometimes it's not like, oh my God, these people are terrible. Sometimes it's just not for you.
Yeah.
Like, I ran across a band and they were really into like that kind of Tool.
Sure.
And like a little bit heavier metal. And it's just like, you know, I did the heavy metal band thing and I was terrible at it because it just wasn't that fascinating to me. And I love listening to heavier rock, heavier metal. And like, you know, cause I can, you know, I practically grew up burning out every Pantera CD I ever got.
Right.
You know, there's probably still one somewhere in that Volkswagen Jetta I used to own.
Right.
But you know, if that's not your style or that's not what you're willing to play. And I would also say if you're looking for people to play with and you're not really sure if you should play with them for X, Y, and Z, if you give people a chance, sometimes just because you start with band A doesn't mean that this one guy that you met this one time might give you an opportunity for band B and band C. It's all about networking, whether social media or just in person. I highly recommend in person, because if you run across a person like, for example, who insults your wife and calls her a hooker.
Yeah.
You can find out that beforehand, not halfway into knowing this person.
People like that will usually show their hand well before that actually needs to be.
Yeah, he was about to get some hand shown.
Well, I'm sure he was. Well, that kind of brings me, kind of like segues really nicely to the next point I was going to say. When you're first starting off like this, say yes to everything. And the only reason why I say that is because of what you just said is the networking. Yeah. You never know where saying yes to this gig that's kind of like, I'm not really a Florida Georgia Line guy, but that's the vibe this band's going for. You have no idea what that group is going to lead you to go to the next thing. Oh. The interactions that you could have with just one person at a gig that digs what you do. I mean, one of my favorite documentaries is like the, what's it called? Hired Gun.
Oh yeah, I have that bought.
Yeah. Well, now granted, that is like at the higher tier
of course.
Musicians. But those same things happen all the time at lower levels. You have guys that go to shows, and it's just like, dude.
You mean I can't go hire John 5 right now?
Yeah, I mean, you can. you definitely can. If you sent him a couple, you know, I don't know. He'd probably 50 grand might get his attention.
Here's 50 grand. Answers what? Send 50 grand.
Well, no, but with the local stuff, man, you go play with a band and you really kill it with this band. Like you said, you never know what it's going to unlock for the next band or the next group or the next thing. And the thing is, and this is another thing not to take too personally, especially in Nashville, or I'm assuming most music cities, the musicians are such a dime a dozen that if you say no to a gig, there are 15 other people, like I said earlier, that are going to take your place for that gig.
Well, not only that, but if you're one of those people that says no to everything, pretty soon your phone that was flashing every 15 minutes isn't going to flash anymore. Because no one, and it, you know, if there's a reason why, or maybe you just don't gel with that person, like, that is what it is. Just be honest with people. Don't sit there and string someone along.
Communication.
Into oblivion and, you know, sit there and, you know, oversell them on your presentation. And then whenever it comes time for you to really nut up or shut up, you're nowhere to be found. And it's like, well, now I know. Oh, well, we just got this new guitar player. His name is blah, blah, blah. Oh, I know him because he told me this, that, and the other, and I never saw him ever again. And, you know, it's easier to ruin a good reputation than it is to rebuild a bad reputation.
100%, dude. Personal to me, I have had a bunch of people here. I don't know what's happening. Stars are aligning, I guess. Hit me up for different things. They all happen to be Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. Well, I happen to work Saturday, Sunday, and Monday nights.
How dare you?
I know, right? So that's the first thing I always tell everybody whenever they hit me up. And I'm like, hey, full transparency, I work 3 days a week, which is really awesome for my family life because I'm here 4 other days. But the 3 days I work happen to be Saturday, Sunday, Monday.
So you need to get on my job plan. My job plan is get paid for zero work.
Well,
I don't recommend.
It's not zero work.
But no, it is.
Well, but what I'm saying is it's the honest, transparent, full communication. You know what I mean? I'm not going to tell a band, oh, dude, I'm super interested, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm your guy. And then the second they book a freaking gig on a Saturday, I'm going to be like, oh, crap, I forgot to tell you guys, I actually work.
Oh, and to kind of parrot that, don't say that you can play keyboards or you can sing as well as playing guitar and then you actually can't. Like, don't sit there and lie to someone, because once you get called out on it, they're not going to bother. You know, you just ended up wasting everyone's time.
Well, like I've said before, musicians in the United States are a small minority of people. There's not very many people that do it. And if you were in a music town, the second you screw somebody over or you say something that's not true and you get called out on it, that word is going to spread like so fast.
Yeah.
And like you said, you're going to go from a bunch of notifications of people like, oh, hey, you know, we hung out at that writer's night, or we hung out at the Oaken Jam and you were killing it, man. I really want you to do X, Y, and Z with me, to nobody's going to text you. Nobody's going to DM you anymore.
Yeah. Well, you know? I mean, and, you know, like I was playing with, it was actually a rapper who wanted like live accompaniment mm-hmm. with his music beats that he had already done. And it was just kind of just flare him up, spice him up, kind of bring more people to it instead of him just playing through just a PA system. And, you know, when I wasn't sure whether if I was going to be end up staying here or not, and the fact that, you know, driving all the way down to Nashville for gigs that weren't paying, you know, I was like, you know, you'd probably be better off with someone that has a little bit more of that availability
yeah.
in Nashville to do what you're doing. And it's just being honest with him. I didn't want to stop playing with him because I wanted to stop playing with him. I wanted to stop playing with him because it's his band, his music.
Right.
And if I'm not able to deliver an A game, then I don't want to play B game.
Right.
And I don't want him to have B game because it's his name, his music.
Mm-hmm.
It's never going to be this person with Michael. It's this person. They don't care about that. They care about this. And if they care about a headline and not all the writing in between, because it's like, you know, if you started off a paper piece with, and then everyone was good, but in the thing, it's like 22 people died in an earthquake today, and you didn't put that as a headline, no one's going to read the rest of the article, are they?
Right.
everyone was good in the end. Oh, okay.
It's all about marketing. And, you know, one of the best things about the time we live in is it's too easy to market yourself. You know what I mean? If you are a person that is trying to get into this field, not only should you be going out and about getting, you know, faces to names and getting to know people, kissing hands and shaking babies, so to speak.
Well, I mean, it's not even like you have to play at these places.
Just exactly.
To show up.
On top of that, though, I also always recommend to any of my friends that are trying to do any creative endeavor is how you're showing yourself online, because essentially that's your business card now.
Yeah. It's not even more or less. It's literally yes.
You know what I mean? So, you know, you could, you know, once again, don't be spammy. You go hang out with these guys. If somebody asks, you know, to follow you, where you at online, then yes, then you can start to engage that. Don't just start force feeding like, hey, follow my Instagram. Hey, follow my YouTube. Hey, follow my TikTok. You know what I mean?
Oh, and don't be one of the weirdos that shoves a phone in someone's faces. Just show them some low texture grain video
right.
of something that you did. And it's like, you know, if someone asks like, oh, do you have any video of a live performance? You know, then that fits the context. But if it's like, hey, what do you do, you know, normally? Don't send them something that is... You only get a chance to make a first impression once.
Right.
And, you know, I can sit here and spit every idiom at you, but it doesn't make it any difference if you're just going to be an idiot.
Yeah. Well, and one of the, this kind of is slightly off the topic of playing the live music, but it ties in pretty well. When it comes to like making yourself valuable, I feel like you forcing people to see something, or you like shoving something in their face, is the best way to turn them off from wanting to talk to you. The best way to do it is for them to engage you. If they're already interested, they're going to forgive that kind of crappy, low quality video that you know.
Well, I mean, and like I said, like if that's what they're asking for,
right,
then that's what you have. Or if that is all you have, you just go, hey, you know, I don't really have anything else other than this, but this is a fair enough representation, and I would want to be in person to set, you know, a good example of what I'm able to do. And that's really what it is. People don't want to necessarily hear your 45-minute long speech.
No.
They'd rather hear your 5 minutes of playing over a speech, because, you know, everyone that I know, from a person that learned how to play like 2 weeks ago, someone that's been playing for close to 50 years, everyone's going to hype themselves up. I was like, or they're going to be the opposite and be like, yeah, I'm terrible. And it's like, okay, well, you know, I just watched you cover every single music piece that was in Crossroads.
Well, so here's the thing. And I mean, I think with that, like you said earlier, and I 100% agree with you, right? There's never, I don't think I'm ever going to get to a point of a musician where I'm satisfied.
Well, no.
But that being said, I'm not going to undersell myself either. I understand that, and this isn't coming from a place of like, I'm better than whoever. Yes, I am 100% better than most of the people that come to me for guitar lessons because they've been playing for a year.
Yeah.
Yes. When I have 2 decades of playing experience, when you have 2 decades of anything, you're going to be significantly better than the person that just started doing whatever that thing is.
I mean, I have 3 decades of being a disappointment, so.
You must be on it
then. I am an expert.
But no, that's what I'm saying. So it's like, it's a weird balance of being humble, but don't undersell yourself. Be confident when you get to that position where you get to audition for a band or you get to an open jam. And dude, I can't tell you enough. I feel like a broken record every time I say it, but it's so true. Show up on time, be a cool person, and know your instrument. If you do those 3 things, like that's 99% of the struggle right there.
Yeah. Like, and you know, I would also kind of say, or I'd like to say, you know, with the, as far as doing, like making a band, like you need to be honest with what your expectations of what this band is going to be.
Absolutely.
If you're trying to be, you know, the next Metallica or whatever, that is a whole long line of getting to that point. And either you're going to have to be stay committed to it or it's going to fall apart. And if you sit there and you over-evaluate what you bring or what this other person brings into a band and, you know, hey, man, like, this guy's an insanely great drummer, but he's got 3 kids and he works 6 days a week, 9 to whatever. And it's like, you know, that doesn't make him a bad dude, doesn't make him a bad player, but it does make him a liability as far as trying to do something with that much exposure.
Right. So that's the other thing I like to try to bring up to people. It's like, what are the goals if like you're, if you get into a band, like what is the overarching end goal? And I hate when people say, oh, we just want to write some music and have fun.
Well, that's every band.
Okay.
I hope,
that's what I'm saying. I said, okay, yeah, I already assumed that from the get-go. Like I'm talking like, what are the professional goals? And when I say professional goals, I'm not trying to say like, we have to be, like you said, we don't have to be the next Metallica. But the point of a band and the point of writing music, in my opinion, is showing that music to people. And then the best ways to show that to people is in a live experience.
Yeah.
You know, along with recording, along with putting out your music. But to me, that can be done anytime. The live stuff is where it's at. The live stuff is where people,
that's what people believe.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm just saying it's the most authentic. It's what drives everyone to listen to your music on those streaming platforms. It's what drives them to buy the merch. That's the live experience is the core of all bands. If you have an awesome live band, everything else is going to be fine.
Have you ever seen the band My Morning Jacket?
I have not seen them. I've heard amazing things about their live show, though.
So I only got to see a recording of the live show, but literally every time my mom gets a chance, she goes.
Yeah.
And she is absolutely fascinated with them. And it's not so much that they're playing, you know, they're not Yngwie or something crazy, but they play music that jives with her. And they're playing everything from Fenders to Gibsons and have literally a wall of music gear pretty much. And she finds that fascinating. I think that's one of she's always wanted to learn how to play guitar, but I think that that band focused her to actually want to learn how to play guitar. And, you know, is My Morning Jacket opening up at Nissan Stadium? No. They're not.
Right.
But they were a band that decided that this is, you know, where we want to go. This is what we want to do. And that's what they're doing. They're doing what they wanted to do. Now, of course, is anyone ever going to deny wanting to be bigger than what you are currently? Probably not. They're probably going to want to be bigger at some time and someday, you know. And, you know, I heard a little blurb from Joe Bonamassa over the weekend, and he was talking about how the difference between making an album today versus 20 years ago.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything has been the same. Mm-hmm. It's the same price. It's the same prices pretty much across the board, or at least, you know, adjusted prices, but
well, of course,
relatively
yeah,
the same.
Yeah, yeah.
And he was like, the only difference is that, you know, Spotify sends me a check for $750 saying great job on that song. And that song has, you know, almost 3 million listeners of just that one song. And he's like, so if you're in this to just throw everything on Spotify and expect that you're going to be bringing in royalty checks every 10 minutes of thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, he was like, you're just not. Like, albums made money because they were selling them to make a profit.
Yeah, people made money off the record, not off of a streaming service.
Yeah, and when you're making money through clicks, it makes everything a lot harder, and
you're making fractions of pennies on the dollar.
Yeah, like, not like, even if you sliced less than a millimeter sliver off of a penny, that's more than what you would be making off of that. But it's like, as long as you're true to what you want to do and everyone around you is on that same page, then you have a chance to be successful at what you want to do. And you can always increase the amount of weight and the amount of goals that you want to do, or you can decrease. But it's really, if you don't jive with the people in your band, that's not going to be a good band.
Yeah.
And for Mick Mars, if you do make a band, if you give it a shitty name, it's a shitty band.
100%. Shitty name equals shitty band, and like the people you play with, and you'll be successful in some way, shape, or form. I like that. That's a good way to end the show, Mike.
That's better than rat piss and uranium.
That is. I don't know, man. I like rat piss and uranium.
That really needs to be a feature.
It does, man. Unicorn piss, too. I'm going to make that one, too.